Hello, and welcome to the GeoNagger Radio Show. My name is RJ.
And I'm Darren.
And we would like to welcome you to Season 2, Episode 7 of our show.
Special show, because we are kind of live.
We are live, so anything can happen. It's a small studio with wondrous things.
So, fair warning.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's been an interesting month. This is our first time doing it live, so be prepared for any possible mistakes or inefficiencies that might happen.
Yeah. So the our last episode aired just after the death of a very special man in the world of geography, and that is Waldo Tobler passed away. And on February the 20th, actually the day before our last show aired. So he was 87 years old, and Waldo Tobler, to geographers, is best known for the first law of geography. And the first law of geography states that everything is related to everything else, but near things are more related than distant things. So a little bit about Professor Tobler. He was a principal investigator and a senior scientist in the National Science Foundation-sponsored National Center for Geographic Information and Analysis, based at UC Santa Barbara. He was born in Portland, Oregon, in 1930 to Swiss parents, and his father was a consular official for the Swiss government, and his family moved to Seattle while he was a young boy. He served in the military. He joined the American Army in Switzerland and was trained in counterintelligence among the many languages that he spoke, French, English. He was trained in Russian. And upon his discharge, he returned to Vancouver, and he completed his undergraduate work at the University of British Columbia and received his PhD in geography from the University of Washington. So it was quite a sad day on Twitter. I'll tell you that when everybody found out. So for me personally, I think the first time I heard about Tobler's first law was probably in the 1F90 human geography at Brock University, and it seemed like a simple enough rule. It was basically very straightforward, and it made you think. The second you heard it, it made you think. So what about you, RJ?
I think mine was also in first year geography. I have a feeling it was with Chris Fullerton, who probably taught me the basics and who also happened to be the very first guest we ever had in the studio here. It definitely does make you think, like, everything is related to everything else. Well, sure, you can obviously say that, but just, it seems so simple, but it's something that can be thought about and you can make, like, other connections just based on the fact that closer things are more related than distant things. And that's where we can take a lot of our research. That's a good starting point for a lot of professors or students in geography.
Yeah, he said he created software, and he was the first to use computers in cartographic and in geographic research. So that puts him right up there with Roger Tomlinson in Canada as basically, I guess, the I want to say the brothers of geographic information systems. And the publication that he did in 1970, where that first law was described, was a publication called A Computer Movie Simulating Urban Growth in the Detroit Region. So what we will do in the show notes is post a PDF of that article if anyone is interested in reading it. And we'll post also up some more information about Waldo Tobler. So where are we on to next?
We are on to our interview for tonight.
Yeah, sadly, we weren't able to due to some scheduling issues. Our first guest, Dr. Hostovsky, couldn't make it in today to do the live interview, but we hope to reschedule him at a later date. So we have our interview with Colleen Beard, who is the Map, Data, and GIS Librarian at Brock University. So without further ado, we'll head to that interview. Joining us in the studio today is Colleen Beard, the Map, Data, and GIS Librarian at Brock University. Hi, Colleen. Thank you for coming in.
Hi, Darren. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to the evening to talk a little bit about what I do.
Can you give us or take us through your educational path that led you to becoming the MAP librarian at Brock?
Sure. There's a little bit of story to that background. It goes back to when I was about 8 years old, but we had a family cottage in Haliburton, and my father was a teacher, so I got to spend every summer in Haliburton, and I noticed that it was so much different. It was different topography up there than it was down here. So that really got my interest. And I later learned in life that it was because of the Canadian Shield. A lot of water, a lot of hills, a lot of really, really cool topography. And it captured my interest, and that's what got me interested in geography. I spent a lot of time up there, and to me, it was sort of a magical place. However, when I was in high school, I was interested in geography, and I loved to make maps, and I loved working with maps, but I also loved the gym as well. So I was destined to be a phys ed teacher, and right from high school, I went to McMaster and went into phys ed, and I found myself dissecting human cadavers in first-year anatomy class. And I thought, this really isn't for me. So I took a year off, and I took a course in geography, and eventually I enrolled full-time, got a degree in geography in science, Bachelor of Science degree in geography. And I was actually one of the first students to graduate in geography with a science degree, because at that time it was only a Bachelor of Arts. So I took a lot of the physical geography courses, probably because of my interest in Northern Ontario. And I took geomorphology and soils and climate, and supplemented also with geology courses from the geology department.
So you are a graduate of Brock University.
I am.
You are a Brock graduate. I am. Yours is not a unique story in terms of starting in one subject path and then jumping to geography, which I find really interesting. It's a story that plays out in many of our guests that we've had. Could you reflect back on your time at Brock? Who inspired you? And
yes, in first year geography, when I enrolled as a full-time student, that geography 1F90 course that everyone had to take, and back then there weren't a lot of students like there are now, but the professor that taught first year geography, Professor Clark Thompson, really inspired me. He had this flair about him that told stories about geography, but at the same point getting the academic point across. And it was a great learning experience, and he got me hooked. He was very influential in getting me interested in geography. So, yeah, I went on to do a lot of science courses, but also I became very fond of cartography. So I took all the cartographic science courses that the late Alan Hughes, taught at Brock. He was also very influential. And I did extremely well in those courses. So I guess I was destined for the cartographic sciences. And when I was in second year in my undergrad, I applied for a job in the map library and got it. So I worked in the map library throughout my undergrad years, and worked in the map library one day a week. And I kept my foot in the door even after graduating. While I was a research assistant for a professor where we made the Climatic Atlas of North America. And I also had a job at the region for helping with the 911 road network. But I always worked in the map library. Eventually, I got hired full-time in the map library. And when my predecessor retired, I took over the position of supervisor of the map library. And at that time, we were part of the library. Traditionally, we were part of geography, but we were part of the library by then. And the head librarian wanted to make that position of the supervisor of the map library into a librarian position. So I was working in the map library as supervisor full-time and going to University of Toronto, getting my library, they call it library, Masters of Library and Information Science. So I was working full-time in the map library and getting my degree in librarianship part-time, which took about 6 years. So I started at Brock University in my undergrad in the late 70s, and I never left.
Yeah, the map library is one of my favorite spots. Colleen will attest to the amount of time that I spent in the map library over the 5 years that I was at Brock.
Yes, we should have a chair named after you with your name embedded on it.
So what types of services does the map library provide?
Well, traditionally, libraries are information sources. People come to the library for information sources. The map library is no different. We provide information sources, but they're a little bit different. So we obviously collect anything cartographic, maps, atlases. But these days, we also collect digital data. And what was traditionally produced in map form, in print form, is now created in digital form. So what we do is support the teaching and research activities of Brock University. So anybody teaching a course that involves cartographic materials, whether it's print, simply a map, or whether it's digital data, or whether it's geospatial technologies, we make sure that as a library, as a map library, we provide these resources. But also we provide the tech support to use the resources. So a lot of my job is negotiating with outside data producers. And also we still collect maps. We have our excellent collection of historical maps of Niagara and air photos, which I might get into a little bit later. But as for the services, so we provide, we're information specialists. So students coming in and looking for cartographic information, we help them with. But I think one of the biggest advantages of having a map library is to provide students with the technical support that is needed these days. So if there is GIS required to complete an assignment, for example, and the professor or the teaching assistant is nowhere to be found, we are or have become the sort of the center on campus where students can come and seek out technical support for their assignments, for their research, and for data resources.
So in your time at the map library, I would assume that you've seen a huge expanse in the role across faculties at Brock University, not where it might have been just in the geography department that you were doing work for. Now it's vastly expanded across the entire university.
That is so true. Traditionally, the map library was part of the geography department, for obvious reasons. Back when map collections first emerged, which was around post-World War II, when maps became very plentiful. During the war, they were not. They were very secretive. But after the war, they become very accessible. So universities collected these, and they created map collections. So traditionally, they were with the geography departments. However, as I stated earlier, we became part of the library because it was recognized that maps are used across campus. We use maps in biology, in history, in CUVI, which is a cool climate viticulture institute, biology, community health, business, interactive arts and science, digital humanities. Also, geography is one of our biggest clients. But we teach and we provide resources to all disciplines. So contrary to popular belief that the map collection is just for geography students and is for geography, is untrue. We are across campus everywhere.
I know that the map library throughout the year has map sales when you're trying to thin the collection out a little bit. Is the map library open to the public, and can the public come up and purchase those maps?
Yes, we are open to the public. We have an open door policy. Anybody can come and visit us. However, our priority is to support the students and faculty at Brock University. But we get local researchers. We get environmental consultants that come and consult with our air photo collection, because we have one of the largest air photo collections. Well, we have the largest air photo collection of Niagara anywhere. So absolutely, we're open to the public for research purposes. And yes, we do have a map sale. We have to weed every once in a while to make room for either other resources or more computers. And maps that really aren't used that much anymore, We have cabinets of them. So they are free to purchase. I think you can, our price now is 10 cents a map or 25 cents a map or a dollar for 10 or something like that. But we're just pleased to get rid of them. So if you're really interested in taking them, they're free for the taking. Maps are used a lot by the education students as well. When the teachers or the wannabe teachers, I call them, in geography want to take any maps into the classroom and teach your students basic skills, basic map library skills or basic library or map skills using scale and legend and colors and how colors represent features, they're free for the taking. And there's all kinds of different maps all over the world that they are free to take.
Now, you've touched on this a little bit, but in your position, what have been the biggest changes in the map library?
I think the biggest change and the biggest challenge has been to move, for me, because I've been there for a very long time, is moving from paper to digital. When you look at it, the function of a library is to develop the collection that supports the teaching and research of students and faculty. That philosophy really hasn't changed, but the format of the information has. So we've gone from printed maps and information to digital, which has created quite a challenge for me, somebody who was traditionally used to paper and had to convert their ways to digital. So I was really sort of self-taught and taught on the job to convert from paper information to digital information. But for me, it was a challenge, but it wasn't a burden. I really embraced this challenge. And once the technology became available, such as GIS, Geographic Information Systems, I really engaged. And I always wanted to be on the cutting edge of technology. For example, back in 1990, I presented a paper at a conference that I go to every year that's hosted by Association of Canadian Map Libraries and Archives. And the paper was called Mac Mapping in the Map Library. And it was mapping on an old Macintosh computer, Macintosh SE it was called. And the monitor was no bigger than 20 centimeters by 20 centimeters, which wasn't even as large as a page size. And I was mapping using SuperPaint. It's a Macintosh software, and a couple other programs as well. But it was something back then that other librarians and students really weren't doing. And it actually won an award with the association. So I always wanted to be on a cutting edge. So even though it was a challenge and a huge change for me, I've really captured it. And with the technology, I also created a fairly good reputation along the way for Brock University. Nationally, if you talk about Brock University, they do have a reputation of being on the cutting edge and making presentations. I've made probably over 30 presentations, and a lot of them have been cutting edge technology for making our collections available and using the technology for the advantage of the students and just keeping up with technologies.
So before we move on to talking about your research, I wanted to ask, where do you see the Map Data and GIS Library heading into the future?
Good question. I thought I already kept up with the future. I was saying that 20 years ago, and I was pretty right on when I sort of anticipated where the map library was going 20 years ago. But now, that's a really good question. I think what we're doing now is making our collections available. We've developed the collection digitally with digital spatial data, but now it's making our collections accessible. We have done a lot of digitization. So that's what a lot of map libraries are doing these days. They have a lot of historical maps. We have a lot of historical air photos. And we are also moving those collections, those print collections, into the digital world and making them accessible online. We have scanned thousands and thousands of historical air photos of Niagara, going back to 1921, all the way, I think we're up to 1968 now. And when you think about a 10 by 10 air photo, and many, many of these making up the Niagara region. There's thousands of them that you have to scan and digitize and make them, convert them in a format that can be web accessible. So this is one of the things that I see future map collections doing a lot of. And actually, again, Brock has engaged in this digitization project of air photos that no other university has done to our extent. We have digitized air photos and put them through a process called georeferencing, which means you mosaic these, you stitch all these individual photos together, and you create mosaics that can be overlaid on the current landscape. And you can look at these through programs such as Google Earth, for example. And there's other softwares as well that are web accessibility uses, so that you can make the air photos transparent so you can compare them to the current landscape, which is really exciting for researchers. So this is sort of the direction that the Map Library is going, is converting a lot of their paper information into digital. And another sort of futuristic venue that I see is working with researchers more. Right now we're building a digital scholarship lab in the library, which is going to be sort of a collaborative unit with other sectors on campus. And I see the Map Library playing a very significant role with this initiative in working with researchers, introducing them to new technologies, and ourselves learning different technologies and sharing sort of those technologies with others on campus, and creating some fairly unique research with virtual reality and augmented reality and 3D modeling. And when you just think you're sort of in pace with the current technology, something new comes out, and it's very difficult to keep up with that technology, but also very exciting. So I think it's really the responsibility and the role of the Map Library to keep up with these technologies, which I find really exciting and challenging.
So on to your research now. I know for a fact that you have a passion for the history of the Welland Canals. Can you tell our listeners about this and about your research, and how did that begin?
Yeah, I am very passionate about our history. I'm especially passionate about HGIS. It's called HGIS, and it stands for Historical GIS. And it's using current technologies to study a historic subject. So with me, I think one of the inspirations was many years ago, I think it was 2009, there was a Welland Canal Symposium held at the Niagara region. And it was a symposium to get canal enthusiasts together, local government agencies, local politicians, local researchers, and sort of discuss how we can raise awareness about the historic Welland Canals so that we could get designated heritage status for the canals. I think this is how it all started for me. Although I knew I was sitting on a very unique and rich collection of historical maps and air photos in the collection, it was really this symposium that got me interested in how we could make these resources accessible to the public and bring further awareness to the general public and to the Brock community about these resources, about the Welland Canals. So after the symposium, I went back to the Map Library and thought, what can we do? We've got these resources from the Map Library, from the Special Archives, Special Collections and Archives at Brock, the museums, the local public library. How can we showcase these resources? So I created a Google Earth project, which involved mapping the routes of the historic canals and geotagging historical photos at, let's say, canal features, the locks, the position of the locks, and points of interest of the canal, certain points of interest, such as industries. So I had a lot of historic photos that I geotagged at certain points using Google Earth as my globe, which was very popular and is still available from our website, the Brock maps data and GIS website today. However, I was on sabbatical a year ago, and I thought this has to be enhanced because the historic canals deserves much more attention than just lines on a map and points on a map. So my intention was to map the historic canals 1, 2, and 3. We're on our fourth canal. The current canal is the fourth canal. And raise awareness about the historic canals, because a lot of people don't realize that there were 3 canals before the current canal. So I mapped them in detail, very detail, very much detail, outlining the individual locks and outlining the paths, the routes that the first, second, and third canal took through St. Catharines and Thorold, because they took different routes through the city. And I also wanted to inventory all the canal remnants through the city. And this involved, I would say, hiking about 20 to 25 individual hikes and covering about 80 kilometers, either by foot, by bicycle, or by boat down the 12 Mile Creek, and mapping the routes, mapping where I thought some of the locks are, because much of it is buried or has been dismantled because of development, or it's submerged underwater. So I mapped where I anticipated all the locks along the first, second, and third canals would be positioned, and all the weirs, and all the points of interest. And I also inventoried any remnants I could find, whether it was a weir that was still intact or was in rubble, concrete rubble. I mapped every bollard, a bollard being a concrete feature where they tied the ships. It's a round feature for tying ships. So every bollard, I think there were over 200 bollards that I mapped, and took pictures of all these features as well. And all this information is available on a website now, an interactive website that you can go to and click on a particular feature and look at the current status of that particular feature or historical image of that particular feature. So it was quite a project that I engaged in, but certainly a fun one, which enhances the first, second, and third canals throughout the city of St. Catharines and Thorold.
So we should let our listeners know that you have a presentation coming up at the St. Catharines Public Library on March the 28th, so we will provide information about that in our show notes. Is this what you'll be discussing at the presentation?
Yes, I'll be demonstrating the website and telling stories. I think an important aspect of the presentation is to tell the stories of my mapping experiences, but also telling stories about what other people have encountered by interacting with the website. I have a few stories to tell which are quite compelling, and I also think if you have a compelling story to tell, you can engage the audience and seize the audience, and I think that's what makes it so interesting. I did a presentation at the St. Catharines Museum back in October, which brought over 100, I think 130 people to that talk. So it was a fairly successful and popular talk, and I hope that will be the case with the St. Catharines Public Library as well on March 28th. So I tell some interesting stories, and I'm sure I'll have some enhancements to the project from when I did the talk in October.
I smell a possible book.
Oh, good heavens.
And finally, with your in-depth knowledge of geospatial technologies, is there anything that surprises you now?
That GIS can be used for the most obscure and sort of the not so obvious applications. For example, we had a couple gentlemen actually come into the map library today, the map data and GIS library, and tell us how useful the air photos were for locating old cemeteries that they could not see on the ground, but by looking at our historical air photos, they were able to locate cemeteries that they had no idea were there. So And this is becoming quite popular, actually, with some of the municipalities. I'm sure there's a name for it.
Necrogeography.
There you go. I knew there was a term for it. But it's becoming quite popular with some of the municipalities for mapping cemeteries. So it's a good example to show people that if there is a location on the ground, if a feature has a location on the ground, it can be mapped. And that's what we're interested in. Another good example is one of our students, actually, we just awarded him with the Esri GIS scholarship, and he's doing a project on ice hockey analytics. So he's taking data that has been captured by a hockey team where locations of where the players have shot the puck on ice and whether they scored, whether that was a scoring goal or whether it wasn't, and doing analysis with these locations of puck handling and using it to analyze the game. Another example of very large scale mapping. How big is an ice rink? It's not that big of a rink, but using locations of on ice hockey activity for analyzing and improving the game, hopefully. So it's rather quite exciting.
Yeah, that's that student is Kyle Rankin, and we are getting him on the show at some point in the next month or so. And there is also a student at Niagara College in the GIS program that's currently doing a cemetery project. So we're getting her in as well to talk about that. So thank you, Colleen, for coming into the show. We really appreciate your time. And I would definitely encourage everybody to listening to go visit the St. Catharines Public Library on the 28th of March. There will be more information on the GeoNiagara Radio Facebook page about the event. And thank you for coming in, Colleen.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thinking of pursuing a career in the field of geography or tourism? The Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University offers 3 and 4 year bachelor's degrees and a geography graduate program, each with several study options. At Brock University, you'll get an excellent education with hands-on experience through internships, study abroad programs, co-op, labs, seminars, and more. Explore the world through your studies. Come to Brock and experience the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies today. Check us out at brocku.ca/geotour.
Broadcasting from Brock University in St. Catharines, this is CFBU 103.7 FM.
That was a fantastic interview with Colleen. It was so great to have her. She's been the map librarian as long as I've been at Brock, which has been 5 years now. It's great to see her face. She's very friendly and is always a pleasure to talk to in the hallways or in her office.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing her talk at the Centennial Library in St. Catharines next Wednesday. The Welland Canals throughout Niagara are probably one of our most important, I guess, cultural assets in terms of built environment.
Sure.
To see where they've traveled through St. Catharines at the various points in time, whether it was through 12 Mile Creek or the one that was cut right through the middle of St. Catharines, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see a different perspective on the impact of these canals on our industry is going to be really neat to see. And I think she's got some great stories as well to tell. So I'm going to push her to do that book because I think she's got some great stories to tell about her year-long sabbatical putting that project together.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we're going to start wrapping up the show, but first we want to tell you about a few things to keep your eye out for. The first being a new to me anyway, website known as BioQuest. BioQuest is an app. You can download the app, register, and log in, and basically you can identify biological things in your area. So, for example, they have one going on about birds right now. So you can identify birds or take a picture of a bird and upload it to the site and either identify it yourself or upload it to have other people crowdsource and help you identify it. So there's two different ways you can do this. You can identify sites by submitting sightings of animals, plants, and fungi you find in the wild, or you can identify the sightings of other players to earn points. So basically, you can compete against other players for prizes, and there is a global monthly BioQuest that you can participate in. You can win some awesome prizes as a part of this, and if you score the best find, best phono, you may be get lucky in the Active Adventurer prize draw. So there's a very big one coming up in a couple months from May 18th to 22nd called the 2018 World BioQuest. There'll be lots of players all around the world competing to earn points on all their sightings of wildlife that they see. And you can even keep up to date on local BioQuests. They change by the month. Right now, there's coming up in April will be Beetlemania BioQuest, and that's going to be happening from April 6th to April 22nd. And also coming up in April is BioQuest University. So universities are going to compete head-to-head for the most biological sightings on or off campus in their local neighborhoods. And that's happening from April 1st to 30th.
And we should also mention that as of yet, there is no Canadian university representation in that competition.
There is not, that I've noticed.
So we encourage members of Brock University or other universities abroad in Canada that might be listening to this show to register and sign up for it.
Mm-hmm.
So the next app that we want to talk about is an app called AllTrails. AllTrails can be downloaded on the App Store. And basically what it does is it has trail maps for over 50,000 trails around North America, United States, and Canada. And I believe there are also some international ones. And the really cool thing about AllTrails is it provides you the ability to upload pictures, make recordings of your trail walks, and it calculates, you know, the distance that you've walked. It calculates the elevation that you've climbed. It's a lot of great information, and when you purchase the larger package, I think it's about $100 for like a lifetime membership use of the app. It gives you the ability to actually print off PDF maps of the trails that you are planning to walk or have walked. And it's a really good way to get outdoors and be active. And at the same time, you know, you learn how far you've walked to keep your health up and get outdoors and active. So more information about that can be found at alltrails.com. And for more information about BioQuest, it's questagame.com/home. And that's about it for our apps this episode.
Mm-hmm.
We have some events coming up. The Go Geomatics March meetup is happening on Saturday, March 31st at Fresco's on 4th Avenue in St. Catharines from 6:30 to 9:30. Also on April the 28th is the Go Geomatics meetup at the same location and the same time. And incidentally, today is International Day of Forests. So it's kind of late in the day, but maybe on the weekend, take a run out to your local woodlot, woodland, and take a stroll. There's some great health benefits of immersing yourself in the forest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I might take a gander through Burgoyne Woods sometime. That'd be awesome.
So if you want to contact us, we'd love to hear from you. We can be reached on Facebook, GeoNiagara Radio Show, and we can be found on Twitter at GeoNiagara. And we encourage you to reach out to us and ask questions. If you have any show guest suggestions, that would be great as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we really look forward to hearing from you.
All right. So this about wraps up our episode for this week. Our next episode will air Wednesday, April 18th, 2018, at 6 p.m. right here on CFBU 103.7. I'm RJ.
And I'm Darren.
Good night.
Have a great night.
You have been listening to the GeoNiagara Radio Show, sponsored by the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University.